He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.
Morning. Good morning, listeners. Some cars near you may be a lot more expensive and may not be, depending on what happens with the so-called tariff programs that our federal government is trying to place upon the world market of imports of parts and vehicles versus the exports of parts and vehicles. And an example that is across the automotive news waves, not necessarily across the radio and TV waves for the public to hear. The example is in a Chinese-made Buick that now comes to the country, say, at a $30,000 price range, and the tariffs are imposing potential import surcharges of up to 25% on automobiles, and that could include them coming from Mexico. We don't know what's going to happen with the NAFTA situation when it all pans out and all the arguments and all the lobbyists get finished with their busyness, but it will also possibly happen to car imported vehicles that are built for the U.S. market in Asia and in Europe, including England and the like. But the Envision, the Buick Envision, which is built solely in China currently, sold 40,000 vehicles in the U.S. at their current pricing levels, which are not hindered by potentially increased tariffs, and they might go up as much as $7,500 a vehicle for the same vehicle with no increased content.
And when will we know this?
I don't know.
Okay, so just from a practical,
it hasn't
like I'm a buyer.
Public attention yet, but for the listeners in this group who pay attention to our show, and I hope there are at least a few, and you and I have bought cars that have not been made in the U.S. in the past, although some of them now are made in the U.S. that I own, brand-wise, not necessarily the models. If you're interested in a car that you know is currently produced outside this country, and you have plans to buy one, the question is, do you wait and see whether or not these tariffs actually go into effect and the car of your choice, a European-built or Asian-built or outside the U.S.-built car of your choice happens to be amongst them afflicted by the tariffs, you may be paying 25% more for that same vehicle, maybe, let's say, 2 years from now than you are right now.
So you'd have to take action.
Well, if you know this and you're studying it, I don't know that many people are. What will ultimately happen is that you won't know this because the tariffs will go into effect and you'll suddenly want a Buick Envision in 2020 and you'll go to try to find one and you'll find now instead of being $29,95 or $30,000 as a base price, it's now $37,500 as a base price and so on across the board.
Okay.
And now, before Jay gets ranting, he says to me that the people can afford the expensive European imports will buy them no matter what they cost. And he's going to tell us about one that he loves and thinks is the best car in the world shortly. But he wants to talk, so let's go.
No, I think the Buick Envision is not necessarily a great example because I don't think anybody's waiting in line to buy a Buick Envision. I don't mind my sarcasm.
My question was, what is if it's 40,000? Seriously, how does 40,000
listeners?
Units,
it's not an Envision versus a VW. It's a $30,000 cost car now that goes up $7,500 or 25%.
So people buy another car.
I'm just trying to figure out. Not trying to agree or disagree. I'm just trying to figure out. A Buick Envision is not something that's unnecessarily on my list of must-have vehicles. So you said 40,000 of these vehicles have been sold last year. Where does that relate in terms? How many?
They sold because people wanted them and they could afford them and bought them. But
it's a small market share, and it's a Buick Envision. It's a model within the Buick line, which. I'm a car guy, and I am unable to name all of the Buick models. They are mostly irrelevant, I'm sorry, GM, in the big picture. And they're sold on lots where they have Buicks, Chevys, GMCs. And if they cannot sell a Buick Envision, that car salesman in that dealership will surely be able to find something else that is produced here and that does sell at $30,000. So I don't think the mass-produced cars, whether, and this is, as you mentioned, so hypothetical at this point that I really don't think we should be overthinking this. I think it in the high-end brands, even if they get slapped with high tariffs, I think that the they'll still sell.
So for example, Mercedes. If your Mercedes, and this takes us back to a couple of shows ago where no one was quite able to answer where is it built. Is it important? Okay. What qualifies is which bits qualify?
Well, let's not worry about that. It's so complex that at this point,
That is not the point I wanted to make with this topic, and we can get off it in 2 minutes or less if you don't belabor the point. The point is anything made out, any car vehicle made outside the U.S. that may be subject to a 25% imported tax against what they now can be bought for is going to hurt the manufacturers as well. Not really the consumer. Jay's right. If the consumer doesn't want to pay the new 25% increase price for whatever car they were going to buy beforehand, they won't buy it. They'll buy a domestic-made alternative, and they'll go on with their lives. It's the manufacturers that are really going to be affected by this in their plans of what kinds of cars they think they can sell to the U.S. people now versus in the future. And it may change the whole automobile production idea. We've been moving production out of the country for the last 10 years, whether it be to China, Mexico, whatever. And all of a sudden, maybe this is one way Donald Trump, our president, thinks he's going to bring jobs back to the U.S. automobile manufacturing department. I don't know. That's it. Closure from any of you two, or can we move on to Jay? Because he's got a lot of things to talk about.
I'll get on to the next topic, but I think we've transferred a lot of car production overseas, but we've also brought a lot of manufacturers have started building cars in this country, and that goes back to 20, 25 years ago. I mean, Toyota Camrys are built here. Most of the Subarus are built here. Volkswagen, BMW have plants down south. So it's a complex situation. Moving on to cars, I've had a pretty good week. Last week, I had the opportunity to drive a few interesting cars, and I thought I'd share my experiences.
In what capacity were you driving them? Just
different one, and I'll get to that other topic. I also brought my VW to the to
diesel
a dealer.
Station.
To have it, quote-unquote, fixed, which it did get fixed. And by the way, it's running just fine. And so I guess I'll start with that. I was a little worried because the diesel fix, I have a Volkswagen Touareg with the bigger engine, with the V6 diesel. And so that engine was slapped with sanctions after the scandal hit in 2015 and affected all the four-cylinder, two-liter diesels. And when I bought my Touareg, I kind of knew that it was very likely the scandal would hit that engine as well. It would expand, yeah. anyway, so it did, and VW compensated me very handsomely, to say the least. I still have the car. I reluctantly brought it in to get fixed because I did want the money they were offering. And the fix is a software fix only. They actually mainly reprogrammed the transmission. That sounds odd enough, but that's what they did. And that's actually, I went back to read this over the weekend, that's part of the fixes that they apply to the four cylinders as well. And the whole idea is they want the shift points in the automatic transmissions to be higher when the engine is cold, because a lot of the bad emissions are produced when the engine is cold, and therefore we're trying
to warm up
the car as quickly as possible. How do we do that? Rev it up. So that was the idea. That's the main thing. And the other thing is they they add, they actually, the cars use more of that urea additive, and it now needs to be refilled more often. So the newer diesels have what we call DEF, diesel exhaust fluid, that is injected into the exhaust and actually
cleans it.
Cleans
the emissions. Yeah. This is for morons.
Morons. No, because it is complicated.
I'm making this up based on what you're saying.
There's a lot that Jay is bringing up, which is interesting to me and Jay and maybe you, but I don't know what's going on. I have, right now, I have a leased Jeep Cherokee, new 2019 Jeep Cherokee, and I have an older Jeep Cherokee, which I own, and both are four-cylinder engines. But gasoline engines also emit pollutants. And I can tell you on cold day startups, they emit a lot more. Jay is absolutely correct. This is where they're trying to clean up the exhaust. And I have noticed a lot of new exhaust smells coming in my air intake in my car driving behind other vehicles. But let me tell you what I've noticed about the two Jeeps. The 2019 heats up its coolant from whatever its temperature is, its cold start, to running temperature by the time I leave the driveway of my home in Sharon and get to the first stop sign less than a tenth of a mile away. It is running at 175 or higher temperatures. My four-cylinder gasoline 15 takes up to 4 miles to get to that running temperature, which means theoretically the four-cylinder engine in the older vehicle is polluting longer and more than the apparent four-cylinder, which is a turbo engine in the new Cherokee, is based on the theory that a hot engine is burning cleaner than a cold engine. And I think Jay will agree with that. So this is not just a diesel issue that Jay is bringing up. The diesels got caught in a major situation, and there's still the fallout is still falling.
People are getting fired, charged. VW just got fined $1.2 billion
in Germany. The head of Audi just got arrested. And it's going on. But as Jay says, correctly so, we've got hundreds of thousands of diesel tractor trailer trucks unaffected by the diesel recall in the vehicle line. And so we're polluting at all levels regardless of this diesel thing with the Volkswagen.
Yeah, and but, it's look over there. Look
but
over
Jay's
there.
Answer to his diesel dilemma answers the question, what did they really have to do? And they basically figured out how to get the exhaust, the engines to warm up faster. Yep. By making them rev higher in the transmission changes is one, and who knows what else. And I don't know what they've done to my...
The additive.
And use more additives, which they could have done in the first place. They didn't do it because they were trying to have
one stop
every 10,000 miles
and
or whatever.
It's not dissimilar to what has happened in the food industry, for example. It's like, well, it's convenient, so we'll just put all of this in it because it, you know, gives it that it cooks in a second.
A lot of the four-cylinder diesels didn't have the DEF stuff in
right.
at all.
The older generations.
My 2010 Jetta wagon, which they bought back from me at a very nice price, I might add, like what Jay was talking about. And they're all for sale, and Jay will get into that in a minute. Didn't have any of this DEF fluid stuff, so they were almost the 2010s and 11s and 12s. I think were pretty much. I don't know they're unfixable, but Jay will follow that up now.
I don't know where they are actually, but what I can tell you. So my Touareg runs just fine. I was a little apprehensive. I came back. I brought it to a dealer who is a friend of mine. In Middletown, New York, Compass Motors. They are a Volkswagen Mazda dealership. And so I trust the dealer. I brought it there. I wanted it to be fixed there, which is how I got a chance to drive other cars.
But it also helps. This is a relationship thing that I just want to interject. It definitely helps, and you mention this all the time, but it definitely helps to know somebody. You've got to have some sort of relationship with a car person. And this always takes me to, hey, have you checked out Carvana yet? Because these ads are making me insane. But
yeah. Well, I was apprehensive about the fix, and it turns out it's just fine. I'm sure it's going to consume more DEF, which in my case is a bit of a problem because it's a pain in the neck. I have to take the spare tire out of the trunk to actually do the refill. But it is
okay,
what it
but
is.
That's something
Not
that
many
that,
owners
so,
are going
to
do that.
Yeah, I just I have and to stop right that right there because I'm thinking, oh, gosh.
Yeah, oh, gosh.
But I know that I'm not a car guy. Ergo, so I'm representing the non-car guys, and that to me would seem like a real pain in the backside.
It's a small price to pay to be driving a Touareg, which is an absolute great SUV.
Right. Let's move to your test drives, please.
Okay. So my test drive. So I was at that dealership, and let me say one more thing about the diesels. They're back on the market. That dealer had four or five Passats, 2011 to 2015. With anywhere from 30 to 100,000 miles and prices from 11,000 to 17,000 miles. They come with great warranties. They get 45 miles to the gallon, as we all know.
So basically, you can get your diesels back.
Yes.
You can get your diesels back. They're out there.
An excellent cost factor to buyers who want to buy a used diesel, and they get all the same mileage attributes. And as Jay will say, I'm going to interrupt him or interject ahead of him, they'll last 200,000 to 300,000 miles easily, probably. They've got a good warranty.
And do you have to add the DEF?
Yes.
And where? But
they're
they
all
fixed it, so you don't have to
equipped.
Move.
They're all DEF. This
and
last generation.
Talk again. What is this? Diesel something?
It's a,
diesel
it's
exhaust
an additive
fluid.
Okay. That helps
urea.
Clean up
if
the
anyone's
exhaust.
Listening and they just came in, they heard DEF and okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You buy it by the gallon at any parts auto parts store.
And there's a place that you can dump it in.
And there's a place you can
and
dump
you
it in.
And you don't have to move your spare tire.
That but it's possible.
Most cars you don't have to move your spare tire.
You don't have
in mine,
one.
I do, and I whine and complain, but. Not
but anybody
much.
Who buys these should have an extra gallon or so of DEF in their luggage compartment or under the floor or the rear deck of a wagon or something, just in case they find out a light goes on in the dash.
You have 1,500 miles.
You got 1,500 miles when the light goes on to get to a dealer near you if it's dealer installable like the Touareg would be, or if you can do it, you just have to open up and put the DEF in the – hopefully the filler neck, which is somewhere within reach and
it is
accessibility.
In most cars. In different places, but accessible. So,
a lot of new diesels. He did not test drive a diesel Jetta, though. I'd like to know whether they...
No, but I've read about him. I went back and read articles this weekend, and the testing is that they get the same MPG, they get the same performance.
People love those cars, so it's just going to be... That's going to be interesting.
And every VW dealer's got them on the lots, because I was at another dealership, Mitchell, and they had four or five for sale with window stickers on them. And what was the warranty you said? It's a big warranty.
It varies. I think mine, and I couldn't figure that out this morning before coming here, but I think mine is extended to 100,000 miles to anything related to the fix. And that includes pretty much everything because it's software related to the injection, the fuel injection. The fuel injection is related, you know, is related to the
engine operation.
It also, you know, the catalytic converters and the exhaust are controlled by the software. So all that falls under the extended warranty. I think in some cases, I've heard of, I think some Audi cars get up to 130,000 miles. I mean, the warranties are pretty impressive. I think a fantastic deal.
What I don't know is whether the state of Connecticut, which is where we're broadcasting from, and other states are going to have to reprogram their exhaust
testing
equipment when you go in for the recertification of your emissions
control.
To get
a note as with the principal's
diesels
office.
Diesels were like 4 years between them when I had my Jetta, I think. And I don't know whether that'll continue or not, but it'll be interesting to see whether their systems are recalibratable. Without
it's a good question.
Getting expensive new software in each of these dealers, these garages scattered about the state who can do the exhaust emissions. But what else did you test?
So while I was there, I got to test. I drove a Mazda CX-3.
Is small, right?
It's a small SUV. It's the smallest SUV, four-door, all-wheel drive. It competes with the Honda, what is it?
HRV.
HRV. Right. So it's that class of vehicles that is now smaller than what used to be the...
Subcompact, maybe?
Subcompact.
So basically one person and their dog?
It's two people and their one dog, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You'll pull the back seats
down. Four people go to the movies or to dinner, but you know, obviously they're not taking any luggage.
Right, okay.
I always wanted to drive that car. I think it's a cool little car. And I was a little bit disappointed because it is not a – it feels like a small car.
Too small.
It feels smallish. I wouldn't take big road trips on it.
Once you sort of have the sense, if you're not a gargantuan person, you know, once you have the sense that, well, this feels small, it's hard. That's almost an abstract. It's hard to.
Well, the compartment is small. The seats are maybe a little small.
It was a little noisier than I expected it to be. The engine is a little rougher than I expected it to be. I mean, it's a great car. It's just I thought it was really a. What I had read about it made me think that it drove like a much larger car. It's still a small car. What else did I drive? I drove a Volkswagen Golf R, which is the high-performance Volkswagen, 300-plus horsepower.
Gasoline.
All-wheel drive gasoline. Very inconspicuous car. It looks like any other Golf, but it basically is a race car on in disguise.
It's a Golf on steroids.
Right. Okay.
And the bottom line is it's too much car, it's too much power to drive on the roads.
Even all wheel?
Well, it's just you can't if you're driving on regular, you can't use it. You're driving in second and third gear. Now, after that I drove a new MX-5 convertible, little Miata, and I have to say it's so much fun. It drives like the original. It drives like a small car, a little bit like a tin can. It's not a Mercedes. It's not an Audi convertible. It's a little Miata. But
do you remember?
It's great.
Do you remember the first Miata?
Oh yeah, I have one in my garage. I drove a lot of miles in the first Miata.
Was that tin canny at all to you?
Yeah, it's a little tin canny,
okay. And it is lighter than the new one.
I drove my Miata back from Florida up 95. It's a memorable experience.
Yeah.
It's
like 6 or 7.
Fear
I remember,
of physical pain is in the back of your mind.
I think the new ones though have airbags on the side as well as in the front, whereas the old ones probably just have airbags in the steering wheel and the passenger compartment.
But interestingly, they're not selling all that well. The one I drove was a brand new 2016.
Sticker price?
Sticker price was 32, and before even asking, anybody can walk out the door.
25?
No, 28, and I'm sure that, you know, that's without before asking.
Right.
Yeah, and that goes a long way. Weren't the original Miatas like 15,000 or back in those days, and that's 30 years ago.
I bought mine when they were all for sale for 5,000. You could buy any Miata, you know, they were used cars, and $5,000 Miatas were all over the place.
Okay, we want to close with your favorite vehicle of all time.
Oh, my new favorite vehicle?
Yes. Tell the listeners.
I might not tell you what I told you, but Range Rover, a supercharged, fully optioned Range Rover.
List
if you can
sticker.
Only have one car, and you must have only one car, and you can afford only one car, but you can afford that one car, that Range Rover should be at the very top of your list.
The big one.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the one that looks like it was sat
like,
on by
right.
a...
Not the one... The wannabes one.
By Heffalump.
Not the LR4s. Not the Evoques.
You mean the proper.
Yeah. The proper. Top of the line. Sticker price?
I don't know. Somewhere around 130 to 150.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the top. I mean, that has just naturally been at the top.
It does everything well.
Yeah.
It's comfortable. It's fast.
It's big.
You know, I have to say, it got over 10,000 miles that I didn't do, over 20 miles to the gallon. It's not that bad.
It is aluminum now. And one of the neatest features that Jay, I will tell you before Jay does, because you might miss the time, is that when you get out or in, it settles down
lower on itself
before you have to get out, so you don't have to step down and possibly fall over, and so you can slide in instead of climb
Love
a ladder
it.
To get in. And it all does it on its own.
Love
right,
it.
Jay?
Love it.
Love it.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.